Welcome into chapter 33, If You Could Read My Mind. Okay, everybody, welcome to my office. This chapter is kind of a reflection of the kind of appointment I've been having with patients over the last several years. I've probably been through this scenario, I don't know, maybe 1,000 times or so over these last few years. Basically, it used to be that parents could get a vaccine medical exemption based on family history and based on certain medical problems. And so that's what I used to do a lot of. But at the time that I wrote this book, my criteria for vaccine medical exemptions were basically that the family had to have severe reactions in their relatives or in the parents or in their kids already. You had to have severe reactions to use as your family history criteria to get a medical exemption. That was kind of how I looked at the criteria for exemption. Or I made some exceptions for children or direct household family members like siblings or parents who had very severe medical problems that could be directly related to vaccines. But my criteria for medical exemptions were pretty strict. So for the last several years, I've been seeing a number of patients who don't meet my criteria for vaccine medical exemption. And so the discussion then is, do you vaccinate so your kids can go to school, or do you move out of state, or do you homeschool? And now, of course, no one can get any vaccine medical exemptions anymore in California because they passed the new law that removes virtually all vaccine medical exemptions. So now the discussion with everybody is, since you don't meet medical exemption requirements, what do you do? And so I have this conversation with many, many patients. I would say the majority of my patients now homeschool, and then another group of patients, you know, a much smaller group, will walk their kids through this gradual vaccine schedule in order to meet the school requirements. And then some of my patients have moved, of course, but what's interesting to me is some patients call our office and they're just flabbergasted. They can't believe our legislature passed this law. And they're so mad that no one told them they were passing this law. They're like incredulous, like, how dare this law get passed and I not know about it? And they're so like certain that if they had known, they would have been able to gather all their friends together and convince all the legislators to not pass this law. I mean, it's funny to get these phone calls and hear patients talk about this. And yeah, I know we're supposed to be understanding and sympathetic to people, and we are. You know, we're, my staff and myself, I'm very sympathetic to people. But honestly, part of me has been dealing with this for so long, and part of me felt the loss when we lost this legislative fight, that part of me is like, well, where the F were you when we were all up in Sacramento fighting this? And so I guess I don't feel as much sympathy as I otherwise could when I'm meeting a parent who didn't raise a finger to try to help this. And, you know, honestly, a lot of parents out there are like, oh, someone else will fight this for me, you know, or I'm too busy to fight the legislature. I have two kids. I can't possibly go up to Sacramento to join the fight, or I can't possibly take the time to call my legislator. And, you know, people out there that didn't lift a finger to fight this law, I will still show you sympathy and empathy, but I won't be feeling it. Sorry, I'll just being honest here. So I kind of found it fun to insert some of my thoughts in this chapter. Like, you see, I wrote, you know, like I'll say something and then I'll say, you know, he didn't say out loud, because sometimes I'll be thinking these little side thoughts, but I don't say them out loud. And then at the end of the chapter, I'm like, maybe I should. But that just pisses parents off, because obviously, if you're the kind of parent who's going to think you're entitled to not fight the legislature for medical freedom and that everyone should do it for you and that you are justifiably pissed off that they passed a law that takes away your rights, then if I point out to you that you kind of left us all hanging and you didn't do your part and where were you when we were all fighting this, you'll just be all incredulous and, you know, huff out of my office like I dared to insult you that way, right? Anyway, and I don't think I even have any such parents who really feel that way. So I feel like all my patients really were in this fight. And but no, occasionally I meet a new patient who feels this way. And my office staff, they'll tell me, Cheryl will tell me, she'll be like, I got this call and this parent spent an hour on the phone with me, like practically yelling at me how awful this mandatory vaccine law is. And can we believe they took away vaccine exemptions as if this is news to us? And, you know, some parents just need to vent, and my staff is there to listen to parents vent, and that's what we do. But it kind of, it bugs me. I'll be honest. It bugs me that someone's using an hour of my busy staff person to sit there on the phone and listen to you vent about how bad our legislature is. You know, we have a lot of work to do and we have sick people to help, and you need to feel like you have to yell at my staff member for an hour because you're pissed that the legislature passed a law that you knew nothing about and didn't lift a finger to help. So anyway, you get why I'm pissed? Of course, this is very few patients. You know, almost everyone tried to fight this law and did their part. So I point out in this chapter, and this is maybe a valuable speaking point you can use with other people, is this law really invades the doctor-patient space, the sacred space of the doctor's office. And I feel this. You know, when I'm advising patients about whether or not they should do this this smaller vaccine schedule in order to meet school requirements, for me, it's unfortunate because I like to tell them what I think the healthiest long-term choice is. But now I feel like the California legislature is sitting in my office with us, telling us, oh, but beware, if you, you know, unless you follow our vaccine law, you can't go to school. And to have legislators decide that they know any medical choice better than a parent, that's just wrong. That should be wrong in everybody's book. And so I like to give some examples of how wrong this is for any medicine to be mandated, yet how there's that slippery slope argument that shows they will mandate more and more medical procedures and medical treatments on our kids in the future. They will. You know they will. You know, the ADHD law that I refer to in this chapter, that was a real law. Believe it or not, a legislator tried to get that law passed. And the parallels between that law and the vaccine law are so many. And so I draw those in the chapter, and you know, I'm not going to repeat those. But again, of course, you know, kids with ADHD, they deserve to be in school. They, you know, not all parents are comfortable with ADHD meds. ADD meds can kill you. They can cause severe cardiac side effects. And so I point out all the parallels in the chapter on how, you know, technically, if we basically sedated and subdued and got all these ADD kids focusing better with ADD meds, and they would just sit quietly in their chairs and learn well, then looking at it from certain viewpoints, wouldn't that be better for all the kids in the class? Wouldn't that give everyone a better education? Because now the teacher doesn't have to spend half the class time working with that one kid who has no medications and so needs, you know, more help in class. You know, if you believe that's true, and I'm not saying that I do, I'm just saying that the general belief is that these meds do help kids be calmer and learn better. And in some cases that may be true, but let's just accept the idea that that's true, then technically that's better for everybody. And that makes school safer and more effective for everybody because now the teacher can do his or her job much more effectively. So by you not medicating your ADD kid, you're kind of hurting all the kids around you. And that should piss off all the parents with the quotes, normal kids, right? And so, of course, they're going to gang up on the family with ADD for not vaccinating. And they're going to demand that you get kicked out of school, right? I mean, you can see how it's so easy for parents to jump on a bandwagon when the media and the legislature points out a certain group of kids as unsafe and as harmful to the school process and as, you know, kids that make things worse for everyone around them. So as a legislature, we're going to step in. So if there's psychiatric disease, we're going to mandate psych meds. If your kid has a certain infection, we're going to mandate antibiotics. If your kid has, heaven forbid that, you know, some kids get pregnant in junior high or high school, and that's going to scare all the kids around them, so we're going to mandate birth control. I mean, the legislature could step in any way they see fit, quotes, for the good of all the kids around them. So that's what we allow when we let the legislature come in and make even one mandated medical rule or medical law for all kids. And so I think that's a useful talking point to point out for people. So this chapter kind of lays out the conversation I have with patients who are deciding to vaccinate their preschoolers so they can put them in preschool. And I kind of lay it out here, how we do that and how you need only the vaccines mandated for school by your state law, which is in many states, that's only about half the vaccines for now, because only half the vaccines are mandated in state laws right now. They haven't add on any of the newer vaccines that I list in this chapter, but some states are moving towards that. Some states are switching over from a partial mandated schedule to a full mandated schedule simply by changing their law to say, we are now mandating the full CDC schedule. You know, they'll say, if it's on the CDC schedule, we mandate it. So that instantly triples the mandated vaccine schedule for your kids. So right now, I offer these partial schedules spaced out bit by bit for preschoolers, and then even fewer doses for the older kids. And I feel okay about giving these partial schedules. You know, like I said in the chapter, I warn parents that even giving one vaccine has the possibility of a severe reaction. But I feel at least somewhat good about the idea that giving this partial schedule is better than giving the full schedule. And having delayed these vaccines till your kid is 3 or 4 years old maybe is safer than giving them while you're a baby and a toddler. Maybe, you know, again, we don't know for sure. And if you need to find where all these catch-up schedules and all these rules about doing reduced doses are, if you Google search CDC catch-up schedule, you'll see how they advise catching kids up on missed doses. And in the footnotes of those schedules, you'll see all these little rules about how you need one less dose of DTaP and one less dose of polio and one or no doses of Hib. So it's interesting, I point this out in the book, but I just thought I would clarify it a little bit, is a lot of these vaccines you need 3 doses or 4 doses, but for the 2 live virus vaccines, MMR and chickenpox, 1 dose of that kind of vaccine, because it's a live vaccine, 1 dose will work in about half the kids. So if you get a blood test a couple months after you vaccinate, you might be lucky enough to have immunity from those diseases and not need a second dose. But half the kids will need that second dose. So I offer that option to my patients, and a lot of them, fortunately, are immune after the first dose. However, that process isn't being accepted by California public schools anymore Because what they did is, even if you are immune after your first MMR or chickenpox, if you're immune, your doctor has to give you a medical exemption letter saying you're immune and you're now medically exempt from the second dose. Even though your reason for exemption has nothing to do with being medically exempt, you are just simply exempt because you're immune. And I used to be able to write people immunity letters for those who were immune after the first dose. Not an exemption letter, but an immunity letter. And now that I can't write any exemption letters, and neither can any other California doctors, for our kids who are immune, we can't help them. We can't write them a letter for the public schools. Private schools can accept these immunity letters because they can make their own rules, but public schools won't. So this is how they get you. This is how they make rules to try to force compliance on everybody, and it's unfair. And kind of what pisses me off is, you know, they mandate in the CDC schedule, if you haven't gotten any DTaP vaccines, you know, vaccinations for whooping cough, tetanus, and diphtheria, and you're 7 and older, technically they only recommend one pertussis vaccine for kids 7 and older. Therefore, that is the Tdap, the reduced dose Tdap. So it's just like the younger Dtap that you get 5 doses of, but you only get one dose, 7 and older, and it's a reduced quantity of diphtheria and pertussis in it. But the CDC wants you to have 3 total doses of tetanus and diphtheria as a catch-up schedule. So that means 1 Tdap and then 2 TDs. And that's how you meet the school requirements. But it kind of pisses me off is tetanus is not contagious in any way. So there's no way at all that tetanus vaccines should be mandated for the public health and the safety of other kids around you at school. So that's another example how legislators passed a law mandating something that makes no sense whatsoever. And then the hepatitis B thing, that really pisses me off, because in the California law, when they passed the law that took away medical exemptions, it says in plain English, hepatitis B vaccination will not be a requirement for children entering 7th grade. That's always been in California law. That's not a new law. That was part of the old existing law as well. And they kept that in the new vaccine mandate law. It says right there, you don't need hepatitis B vaccine to enter 7th grade. Well, the California Public Health Department decided to get around that allowance, because what I'd always told parents is, yeah, if you can get your kid to 7th grade, then from 7th grade on up, you don't need hep B vaccine, and you only need those few doses that I highlighted in the chapter. Therefore, like homeschooling while you're younger and in elementary school, and you don't have to do vaccines while your kid is younger if that's your choice, then for 7th grade, you only need 1 Tdap, 2 TDs, 3 polios, an MMR, and a chickenpox. If you're immune to those, that's 8 injections you could do spaced out over a couple of years, and you might be okay with that. You skip hepatitis B. Well, the California Health Department decided, no, that's not what the law says. The law only says hepatitis B vaccine is not required to enter 7th grade. They've always required it for 6th grade and younger, so that's always been the case. But I thought kids were off the hook once they reached 7th grade. Public Health Department a couple years ago said, no, we are going to require it for 8th grade and up. Because technically, all the California legislators told us is it's not required for 7th grade. They didn't say anything about letting kids off the hook for 8th grade and up. Now, I feel like the legislators didn't have to write that in the law, because that seems kind of obvious. Anyone reading a law that says hep B vaccine shall not be a requirement for 7th grade entry would then assume that means you continue in school after that without hep B vaccine. But no, California Public Health Department pulled a fast one on us, and they now require hep B vaccine for 8th grade and up. That really pissed me off. Now, a private school could opt to decide to follow what the law actually says and not require it for eighth grade and up, but that would be up to the individual schools, and most schools are going to follow what the public health department says. So that's unfortunate. I mean, basically what I do with patients is I give them some of the vaccines in sixth grade, some of the vaccines in seventh grade, so they meet those requirements. And then I give them the Hep B series in eighth grade. So at least delaying till eighth grade lets you spread a few of those shots out further. So again, this is kind of my life over these last few years in the office, helping parents who feel like they have no option but to vaccinate. I guess I'm upfront with parents, and I like to inform them and you know, make sure they know that these things pose risk. And just because they're getting them one at a time and getting them at my office doesn't somehow, you know, make them guaranteed to be safer, and that there's always going to be some risk. And some parents then, you know, still do opt for the vaccines because, again, they feel like they can't homeschool. I love homeschooling. We did not homeschool any of our kids, but I really embrace the homeschooling culture. I think it's a great way to go, but I get that not everyone can do it. And so, but back to what I was saying, I wonder if I'm like enabling families and kind of promoting this, you know, partial delayed vaccine approach in a way by offering it and by, you know, speaking about it and by writing about it. And I wonder, like, if I stopped offering vaccines in my office, would fewer patients vaccinate? And would they, you know, then just embrace homeschooling? Or would they find some other doctor to give them vaccines? Or would they be forced to give their kid 3 or 4 or 5 shots all at once because doctors won't vaccinate them any other way? And so would they be, you know, kind of forced down that path? And I don't know. That's kind of why I offer these slower approaches to vaccination, is because I feel like parents otherwise would just go somewhere else and have to get their kids 5 shots in one day. So I feel like I'm doing some good by helping them slow it down. But I wonder. Anyway, who knows? So if you're my patient, you know, understand that I feel for you. I agonize with you over this, and I'm here to serve you. And no, I don't ever have these side thoughts about you in my office, unless you tell me you did nothing to fight these laws. So I hope this look into my office was interesting for you. And again, I think the take-home message for this chapter that maybe you can use to talk to other people are kind of basically what I mentioned throughout this corner, was how to point out how this invades the sacred doctor-patient medical space in an office when any legislature passes any mandatory vaccine law, and how they pass laws that make no sense, like mandated tetanus vaccine. And I kind of mentioned this briefly in the chapter, but I do feel like if you can get your friends and neighbors to kind of, you know, see you as a real person and understand you and embrace you, you can share with them how you're kind of agonizing over this kind of medical mandate and how you feel that all children should be able to play together, live together, learn together. And we should not discriminate against people for their medical decisions, and how such discrimination sets a very dangerous precedence for people. And that even your friends who embrace vaccination should maybe see how this is an invasive medical procedure, which is safe for many, like it was for their kids. It's kind of useful to point out to them. You don't want them to think that you think they did something dangerous with their kids. Otherwise, they're going to shut you out as a friend and dismiss you. In order to keep that relationship, you don't want to go down that road. They have to get there themselves if they ever feel like they need to. But anyway, you get them to embrace you as a friend and accept you, then you can kind of help them see these little issues, you know, bit by bit, and help them see that mandated medicine is wrong, And again, that's my ultimate goal. My, you know, main goal is to remove all mandates. And hopefully we'll achieve that someday, some year, some decade. Okay, guys, the next chapter is really, really short, and I haven't decided if I'm going to do a double chapter yet or not. It's super short, and it's a very interesting chapter. I'll just let you wait for it. All right, I'll see you guys on the next corner.